And I am now muting all, and everybody does have the ability to unmute themselves. So as per usual, if you want to interject, by all means, unmute yourself, or you can enter messages into the chat window. Please remute yourself if you do unmute yourself so that we keep background noise to a minimum when you're not interacting with the presentation. So I will go ahead and start the share. And there we go. Okay, so tonight's Q&A, we have a fair amount on the agenda, but we hopefully will have some time afterwards if people have additional questions or comments or whatever for later on. And so I did start the recording, so we're good to go on that, and I did mute all. So our first talk is a little bit about visual wizardry, two different ways that you can enhance your photographs. One is a share from Mike V, and this is on a website called Remove BG, and it's actually a pretty amazing site. You can upload any of your JPEGs, and I think there are a couple of other formats that are acceptable. RAW formats, I don't believe, are, but I think besides JPEG, there's a couple of other ones. And basically, you just tell it remove the background, and it does its wizardry in trying to figure out what's the foreground, what's the background, and does a pretty credible job for free to remove background portions of the image, and then you can download the results as a PNG with transparent background. So I think we have, yeah. So basically you just go to the site, you upload an image to the site, and then you click the button to remove the background. And I'm not sure what capabilities there are on the edit. Let me just see if there's other, no. So once you do it, you end up with that as your transparent background. So this is one that Alan did of yours truly. And so once it's done the removal of the background, you can click the download button and download the resulting image to your computer. So if you have any need for removing backgrounds in images, it's a fast and free way to try out something. And then there's another, we have a share from Stuart on if you want to be a movie star. So it's a way of removing or adding your face to other images or videos that have somebody else's face on them. So you can do it on apparently any video, a GIF, an animated GIF, or a static image file. And you can create videos with your face, animate it, and make, as the slide says, any image move or sing. And this website is reface.app. And here's a couple of grabs from the site itself. So you can extract facial images, embed that into any other image or video file. I haven't tried it. I don't believe that Alan has tried it either. And Stuart, are you on the call tonight?
Yeah, I'm here.
Have you actually
tried
this?
It either?
Okay. Anybody on the call actually ever tried this site?
I just read about it and thought, hey, this looks like fun for somebody.
Yeah. It looks intriguing for sure, but I just didn't want to spend the time that I figured was probably required to actually figure out how the thing worked and how good it was. I would say that if anybody on the call tonight decides they want to try it out and they would like to do a share next week or some subsequent week on Q&A, I think we could set aside some time and you could talk a little bit about the process, what your experiences were with it, how easy it is to do, how good the results are, and so forth. I'd be fascinated to hear anybody's experience on that. So if you do decide that you would like to take up the challenge, send in an email to suggestionbox@opcug.ca and we'll reserve some time and put you on the agenda.
In the chat, Jan says she has a friend who posts these all the time. Maybe she can get her friend on the next week's meeting.
That would be great.
Jan or he or she, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. So I have a little bit of a share on what's next in Windows. So last week, there was, I guess it was late last week, there was a big to-do on the web all over the place with a leaked version of what is claimed to be Windows 11. It was all branded as being Windows 11, and there were a lot of tech sites that were having looks at the new build and seeing what was different in it. It was branded Windows 11. There is some talk out of Microsoft that this was an old build and that much has changed since then. There is a live stream tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern time where Microsoft is going to be talking about what's coming in Windows, which is presumably this Windows 11, if indeed that's what Microsoft continues to label the builds as. The thing that I found a little bit curious about the idea of it being called Windows 11 was that I do recall in the early days of Windows 10 that some upper echelons at Microsoft said that Windows 10 was going to be the last version of Windows and that they would just keep it up to date for as long as it could run on your particular hardware. This is beginning to look like maybe that's not the case, that they are now coming out with Windows 11. And therefore, there will be a sunset date to Windows 10. There has been an end of life of for Windows 10 that was published years ago, and so that may actually be the case. No word on whether it's going to be a paid upgrade or free upgrade or very much of anything. So what's next coming in this version? Better performance, and there's a URL there, but Stuart kindly pointed out that maybe not so much better performance. It turns out that the people who did this performance measurement between Windows 10 and Windows 11, they used standard settings for Windows 10 and high performance settings for Windows 11. So there's no real word out there right now about whether it is going to actually perform better than Windows 10. I would strongly suspect that it will perform as well as. Whether it performs better, that's to be seen. There are many changes to the user interface, and I make a note here, all of this could change because this was a leak build, so anything that you're seeing on my slides here could be enhanced, changed, removed when we come to actual release of Windows 11, which is largely expected to be this fall. So there is a new start menu. And the way it works is it's kind of interesting. Rather than having the fly out from the bottom left and a resizable area where the tiles are, you have these tiles that are in this top half of the start menu. And you can see the two little dots on the right-hand side are indicating that there are additional pages. Personally, I don't like that. I like to be able to resize my start menu so that every pinned icon in the start menu is visible as soon as I click on start. It looks like this, at least in this build, that menu is not resizable. And so therefore you end up with this multiple pages if you have too many icons to fit on the screen. You can click on the all apps that is up near the top right hand corner. And that will bring up more or less the same as the app list in the current start menu in Windows 10, where it's just a vertical list of all your installed applications. The recommended section, it appears to be a replacement for the timeline feature that you now get in Windows 10 with if you have Win plus the tab key. And so they are now populating it automatically with the same types of materials, so documents, web pages, and the like that you've used recently. And you do have a more that is in the top right-hand corner of that one, which presumably will fill out like the timeline does, which is a more scrollable feature. This will bring out more things in that list of recently used applications or documents or web pages. One thing that seems to be really controversial is they've gone to centered icons on the taskbar. This seems to be picked up from the WinX user interface that is now dead. So they've gone to this centered one, which is more like the Mac OS on the desktop. Some people hate it. Some people were saying they love it. It is in this build an option. You can move it back to where God intended it to be on the left-hand corner of the screen. They've added in this kind of neat thing, which is where Snap is available, where Snap is that feature in Windows 10 where you can easily have any window use the left half or the right half of the screen, or as you see those shaded boxes, basically you have this idea of two side by side or three, where one is taking up half the screen and then the two beside it in the top, in the bottom left of the graphic where they're using up the right hand side, or four tiled windows on the screen. And I think because it was not as discoverable as Microsoft would like it to be, they decided to put it that if you just hover the mouse over top of the maximize restore button, you get that flyout menu, which allows you to easily take whatever window you are on currently and snap it to one of the standard positions. There was another screenshot that I came across where it actually showed additional layouts. I don't know if this is something that is a configuration option that you go into and decide what you want to be able to show there, or if it was a matter of the resolution of the screen. If it's high enough, they give you additional options. I don't know. I really hope that they do give you the configurability that is currently available with the PowerToy app, where you can resize things to different sizes of windows, and you can do your own layouts in there. So I'm hoping that they've integrated all of that in there, but we'll have to wait and see on the final release, I guess. There is a new widgets icon on the taskbar, and I've put a square around it. And currently all that happens is the current app that is showing up in current builds of Windows, where you get the news and weather. Basically, it's that, and it flies in from the left-hand side of the screen. And it is huge. It's taking up over a third of the screen in this particular screenshot. The assumption is that other widgets will be able to be installed into that as well, and that you will be able to have various things that would fly into the screen. If you're on a touch screen, you can swipe the screen from the left to also get the widgets to come onto the screen. If you swipe from the right-hand side, you'll get the action center will pop out as it does now. Rounded corners on Windows, real big deal there. And it's not very, very rounded, but they are there. And you will also get rounded buttons on things. If you see, if you look on this screen back with the snap, the window that popped out with the snap layouts on it, they are also rounded. You'll have rounded buttons. You'll have rounded flyout menus. All kinds of things like that will have rounded corners. To me, this is like, boy, if this is what people are getting excited about or having to say, oh, this is all what's new in Windows, well, it doesn't sound all that exciting to me. Okay, that's all I had on Windows 11. Are there any questions that people had? I don't know that there's anything else I know about, but if anybody else has questions. Bob Harris says, looks like Windows 11 will appreciate two monitors. I don't know that it's anything more significantly more than Windows 10 does. I don't know.
Yeah, Bob Walker here. Is there an email address or whatever that we can send any suggestions to Microsoft for changes to Windows or improvements?
Yeah, well, actually, the feedback hub is the sort of official way of putting in any feedback you have, whether it's kudos or complaints or list of things that are not working that you wish were fixed. So if you just click the start button and type feedback, it'll come up with the feedback hub, and you can look for similar comments to what you're making. You can search for that. It actually carries more weight if you upvote something that already exists rather than starting with something brand new. But if you don't find anything that already exists in the feedback hub that is saying what you're trying to say, then by all means put in a new thing. Just be aware that the more upvotes there are on things, the Microsoft tends to lean more weight onto that. But that's probably your best bet for giving feedback to Microsoft.
Yeah, because the one thing I'd really like to see is some way to configure and set up in your own way the quick access lists and the jump lists.
Yeah.
You know, set your own rules. So, you know, here's what gets on the list, and here's how many items I can have on the list. And
You can customize currently with how many items are on the list. I'll put a note on that to bring that up. I can show it next week. It's a registry change you have to make to expand the number of items that are on the list. One of the things that I really wish they would put back, because it was there before, is the ability to change the order of things that are on the jump lists. Right now, it just goes in place in order. It used to be you could drag and drop to place them in different orders. And I put that into the feedback hub a long time ago, that they should return to having that functionality. And it appears that my plea was ignored, at least so far.
You can take certain items in that are on one of the lists there and pin it to the list so it doesn't disappear. But if you should unpin it, then it disappears from the list forever.
My experience has been it just moved it down to the dynamic list at the bottom, as opposed to disappearing completely. That's what happens in my cases. But yeah, the big thing for me was I have lots of things that are pinned, but I would like to reorder them. And the only way to order them is to decide, okay, I want these following ones in order, and then pin them in that order, and then they will stay in that order. But it's a kludgy thing to have to put up with for sure. Okay, Alan, did you want me to continue driving while you talk?
Yes, please, if you will.
Okay, on with the next then.
Yeah, so last week I talked a little bit about the Explore File Manager and using DiskMap, the DiskMap feature, to identify essentially space hogs on the phone's disk. Now the trick is, how do you actually clean some of that up? And the problem is, if you don't have root access, if you're just a regular user, you don't really have access to much of the system areas. There are some things that you can do, and we can take a quick look at those now. So one of the things you can do, Stuart mentioned this, is clearing the cache. And it's a really weird system. On older phones, it turns out you could go to settings and you could clear all of the cache data basically by navigating to clear cache data. On the newer phones, newer versions of Android, that is, it appears that you have to clear individual applications, clear the cache of individual applications. So again, you go to settings, but now you have to go to apps, find an app that you want to clear the cache for. And typically, you know, you would maybe choose the browser, because that's probably the one that's eating the most space. And then clear the cache for the browser. But then you've got to do the same thing for any other apps that you want to get rid of the cache, which is really annoying. Another alternative is to use a third party application, and Stuart mentioned Norton Clean, which I had tried earlier on, and it worked very well. However, I think my phone is now running Android 11, and Norton Clean only cleans junk files now. It doesn't clean cache anymore. So I think that's a problem in terms of the newer versions of Android won't let applications clear all of the cache. So it can clear cache, but it's a bit of a pain to actually get there and do that. Another thing you can do is to see if you can install applications on an external micro SD card rather than installing everything in internal memory. And older phones, again, typically you don't have all that much RAM. So the more applications you install in RAM, the less free space you have on the drive. So by moving them onto the micro SD card, and that frees up the internal storage. Problem is, of course, that's dependent on the programmer and whether he will let you install the package on the external SD card. The other thing you can do, especially for things like digital photographs, which take enormous amounts of space typically, even if your app makes you save the pictures to internal storage, what you can do is actually move them to external storage. So if you can't find an app that will let you save it to the micro SD card, then save it to internal storage and then move the kind of archive photographs, if you like, to the micro SD card to free space in internal storage. But again, if you can find a different app, typically a different camera app in this case, that will install on the micro SD card or at least use that external storage, then that's a way to work around that limitation.
If I could just make a comment here, Alan, my son commented that with apps that he moved to external storage, he found that any time an update happened, it ended up moving back to the internal storage and he had to manually move it again. And this is a pain if you set up your phone to auto-update apps because you don't necessarily realize that an app is updated and moved itself back to internal storage. I don't know if that's something that maybe was fixed with later versions of Android. No idea. Just a comment I had from my son.
Or again, it may be app-specific. I've got apps that are installed on the micro SD card and they basically stay there.
So. Oh, okay. Okay, so that might be a one-off.
The programmers have a lot of flexibility in terms of what they do, but they don't pass on that flexibility to the user. That's the problem.
Yeah.
One of the things you can do, or one of the things you can't do, as a regular user, you can't delete system apps or OEM apps, apps that have been pre-installed on your phone when you bought it, essentially bloatware. And things that you might never use, but you're not allowed to disable them because they're in that system storage, which as a regular user, you're not allowed to get to. But what you can do is actually disable the app. And now what that does is it essentially, they say it makes it into a factory refresh for the app. So it minimizes the amount of storage it's actually using. But then the neat thing is it prevents any future updates. So not only do you save storage in terms of updated program material, but you also save time because you're not downloading updates for a program that you're never going to use. And the other neat thing, I guess, is that if you ever really do want to use the app, all you have to do is just enable it. You don't have to actually reinstall it because you really kind of just put it to sleep, as it were, in a minimized fashion in your internal storage. And all of the above I talked about in a presentation I did on Android phones in 2020. So there's a link for the deck, which probably has a bit more detail than I'm giving you right now. Micheline says, Old Man Norton committed suicide today in a Mexican jail. I think that was John.
Yeah, it was McAfee.
From, McAfee.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that notice that he was found dead. And knowing the saga of John McAfee, my first thought was, I wonder if that's really true. It might be just another ruse on John McAfee's part or something like that. I don't know. Anyhow, Yeah, the next share we have up is me, and this is talking about blocking updates in Windows. So we've had a lot of talk recently about fixing broken Windows Update and things like that. But there's another issue with Windows Update, and that's if you want to block updates that are causing you problems. So by and large, I find that Windows Update is very reliable most of the time. Every now and then, you are going to end up with some issue with Windows Update that it goes to do some random update, and it comes back with an error code. And it usually says it's big, you know, X800, 39, 4000 is the error code. And you can click try again, or they will just try again at some point in the future. And I've personally found that anytime you get one of those error codes, you can click as many times as you want on the retry and it will never work properly. So there's a couple of things that I've done to get around the problem. The first is that if it's a big update that you really want, sometimes it'll be something that will be fixed in the next monthly update or something like that. And so on occasion, I have found that mysteriously the update will work after the following Patch Tuesday. If you don't want to wait until then, there are a couple other things you can do. So you can remove an update that is causing you actual problems. You could remove a driver that is causing a problem. The drivers are handled in a different manner than regular updates. And then you can block an update from installing on your system. So to remove a problem update, so assuming that Windows is actually still functioning, but you get some update and it's causing some issue on your system, you can go to Settings, Update and Security, Windows Update, View Update History, and then it will actually list, you go to Uninstall Updates, it will list all of your updates that are installed on your system. You select the problem one, and then you click on Uninstall, and it will remove that update. That seems to work. Like I've done that on a couple of occasions, and it seemed to work reliably. No problem with that. The problem comes with it's likely that Windows is going to try and reinstall that update. And if it was causing a problem for you once, it's probably going to cause you the problem again. We'll talk about that in a second. Drivers are handled a little bit differently. So drivers are pieces of software that handle hardware. And so to get at problem drivers, you right-click on the Start button, and you'll get a pop-up menu, and select Device Manager, which is about third or fourth down from the top. Then you drill down until you find the device that has the driver that you want to remove that's causing a problem. So in this case, in the screenshot, I went down into DVD CD-ROM drives, and I have one driver for my DVD drive. And so you right-click on that, and you choose Uninstall Device. It doesn't really uninstall the device. It uninstalls the device driver for that. And so usually if you restart Windows, if it sees that device, it will try and reinstall a device driver to handle that particular piece of hardware. But it may install a different driver that might work for you. So say you get a case where you've removed an update, and then you're worried about the fact that, okay, Windows is going to try and reinstall that update. So interestingly, Microsoft had a great tool for blocking specific updates, and it got pulled long about January or February of this year with no explanation that I can find. So it disappeared from all of the Microsoft download locations. I saw a bunch of stuff in community.microsoft.com blog, and people complaining about the fact that it had disappeared were expecting that Microsoft just broke something in their links and was going to get put back. It never did get put back, as far as I can tell. So big caveat emptor on this one. I have no idea why Microsoft actually pulled this update. It seems to work for me. It is unchanged in the last 5 years or so since I first started using it. It's byte for byte, the same file was the last version that they had available. So I have no idea why they pulled it, but for me, it does still work. If you want that tool, go to the Internet Archive Wayback Machine at web.archive.org, search for that string that you see on the screen. That was the location of that particular program that they had available for blocking updates. So it will come up with calendars and pick a date, January 21st, 2021, or earlier. It was pulled sometime after January 21st of this year. So if you pick any date on their calendar prior to that, it should come up with, it'll actually automatically download it, because that HTTP link that you searched for is actually a download link for a file called wshowhide.diagcab. So once it's downloaded, you double click it to run it, and then you will end up with a dialog box that pops up for allowing you to block updates. So the next thing that you actually do is you go to Settings, Update and Security, and say Check for Updates, but don't actually install anything. Okay. The reason why you have to do that Check for Updates is this Show Hide Updates will only look for things that are available as downloadable updates. So you can see in my particular instance here, I had four things that are on my system that are available for download at that particular point in time. So when I ran that wshowhide.diagcab and I clicked on the next button to get into it, the next screen you'll get is actually, do you want to hide updates or unhide updates? So you want to hide updates. It'll come up with a list of updates that are available to be installed on your computer. You put a checkbox in any one of those, click on next, and then that will block that particular update from trying to install on your computer. If you want to unblock an update, you can go through the same thing of running wshowhide.diagcab, click the next button, and in this case you say show hidden updates. And anything that you flagged before as being a hidden update, it will show as being available, and then you can check the box to show it. Then if you check for updates, it will show up again on the list as being available to install onto your computer. So repeat, caveat emptor, I don't know why Microsoft pulled it. It seems to work for me fine. I don't think it's doing anything really magical or anything like that. It must be something just in the registry somewhere that it would flag a particular update as not being available, but you may find it useful. If it doesn't work for you, don't complain to me, and certainly don't complain to Microsoft, because they'll disavow all knowledge of it. Okay, Alan, back to you.
So this was a question that came in from Stuart. What are the merits of how you delete restore points in Windows? And he found this article on the web, and he says the first method works well, but he wasn't sure about all the other methods. Now, the first method is basically using disk cleanup and going to the More Options tab, where you can go to that system restore and shadow copies, and you can free up disk space by getting rid of all of the restore points except for the most recent one. And now, Chris and I don't actually use restore points, so we don't really know very much about it. So I kind of broaden the question if we go to the next slide. So everybody on the call, is there anybody who's actually used a system restore point and it did what it was supposed to and restored your system to a working condition? And I've tried system restore points a number of times, and they've never made any difference as far as I could tell. And so I'm in the second camp there. Have people tried to use system restore points but found that it doesn't do anything useful? And for anybody who's actually using restore points, to answer Stuart's question, how do you actually manage them? So anybody who wants to chime in, unmute your mic.
I've used them.
Go ahead.
I've used them. They do get created automatically often when you install things. And you can also, I believe they get created, I think I have them set up to be created every night as well. And I have used them when my system gets a little sick and confused and everything gets weird. I go back to the previous restore point. And what it does is it puts the system back to where it was, the OS and its settings and so on. So anything you install does not, I believe it gets disinstalled since that restore point. It is good for achieving some sanity. At the same time, I usually use check disk to clean up the disk as well, because it's often due to Windows getting confused about stuff on my disk. But I found them useful, I don't know, once or twice a year maybe, not that often, but when you want them, they're a lot better than kind of reclobbering your system and reinstalling everything.
Yeah, because I don't do that. I just go back to my last full disk backup, full disk image, and reinstall that, which is pretty quick.
Yeah, I think system is faster. It's a more complete way of doing it for sure. System restore, it's a little bit, it doesn't restore everything. It does reset drivers that you had and some other things in the registry, but it's not complete in what it restores in the registry and so forth. So it doesn't touch any of your data partitions or anything like that, or data directories or anything like that. So you don't have to worry about it wiping out, files that you created since the last restore point or anything like that. But it is limited in what it can do.
Yeah, mainly it affects the registry. You go back to a previous version of the registry, and I imagine there are some other things it does as well, but that's the main thing that it does.
Yeah, it can replace drivers with older versions of the drivers that were in effect at the time and some things like that. I know there was one other person in the user group who actually did say that it restored a computer to a working state for them, but I'm in the camp where I've tried it a couple times, and I gave up on restore points as being useful at all. I've talked to multiple people at Microsoft who said, it never worked for me either. And they were not able to, they weren't able to say why it worked or why it didn't work for them or anything like that. Microsoft seems to be deprecating somewhat system restore points. One of the things they are doing for sure is they're automatically cleaning out older restore points. And I think that the idea behind it is that if you try to recover from a restore point that is too far back, you can actually cause problems on your system, that enough changes have happened that you can't safely go back to that configuration. And so they will make a point of automatically deleting restore points that they know would cause a problem if you actually tried to use it. I looked on my system just the other day, and I thought I had disabled restore points on my computer because I, too, like Alan, I just count on image backups that I can recover from that, and it's no problem, and I do an image backup every night. So it's as good as restore points, or better, I think, than having restore points. And I discovered that it was turned on for drive C, but I only had two restore points. They were only from about 3 or 4 days previous, both on the same day. So I didn't have much I could go back to anyways on using restore points. In terms of managing them, the biggest thing I think you can do is if you look at the screenshot that's up there now, you'll see a configure button. And if you go in, you can tell it how much space you want to allow system restore points to actually take up on your system. The smallest is 1% of the available space on the drive, but you can increase that to higher amounts if you so desire. And then Windows will live within that particular size that you've set aside for it, and it will automatically delete older restore points to make room for new ones. But I took the opportunity when I noticed that, yes, indeed, I still had it turned on, to turn it off.
Oh, Chris, it seems as though it's just you and I that have the problems. Bill Bradlin says he's used them and they worked. And Bob Harris says he uses them, especially before installing a new program, and he never deletes any restore points. But he also says he never used any. So.
Yeah, well, that's the critical thing. It's easy to create restore points. The question is, do they do you any good if you need them? And well, so Tom has had good experience.
I have used restore points. It did work well on my laptop, which is a Dell. But in previous computers that I had, it didn't work all the time. So the restore points were corrupted.
Oh.
I had many, and I tried many. I had three or four, and I tried each one of them, and they were corrupted for some reason.
It sounds to me like it really depends on what the problem is that you're trying to restore from.
Yeah, I guess.
Maybe Chris and I have just had really bad issues that restore points don't work, where everybody else has got current restore points that have taken them right back where they wanted to be.
Well, I have talked with a number of other people, and quite a few people have said they tried restore points and it didn't fix their problem. Now, I didn't go into detail about what it was that was causing the problem. There might be some commonality in there that, you know, restore point won't fix it if your problem is XYZ. I don't know. Really don't know.
I think the main successes you have is with recent restore points. That's why I have them. I believe I have them. To check, but I believe I have them created every night as well as when I install programs. So if you go back usually to the most recent one, it usually works. If your last restore point was a month or two ago, then you might have problems.
Might be.
Okay, so let's move on, Chris.
Okay.
The next thing we have is a share. This is on shrinking images with UrbanView. And, I had another slide there.
Oh, sorry. Let me go back.
Give me my thunder.
Just a second. Share.
I was going to say that PowerPoint has the opposite possibility of expanding images. So the presentation is by Tom, and I think he's going to share his screen.
Okay. So now I will stop share. And Tom, you are co-host, so you can share your screen.
Okay. Let's go back to – this is UrbanView. Let's go to – so reducing image file size – by UrbanView. And so the message, basically you can do it several different ways. In UrbanView you can reduce the color count, you can reduce the image size, and there are a couple of plugins for UrbanView that will also reduce sizes, and that's the Riot plugin and the PNG out plugin. So let's go to UrbanView. Here we have a picture of a cactus. As you can see, it's a fairly big picture. It's about 45 megabytes. And it's quite big. So if you save it, it's 18.72 megabytes. I guess 45 megapixels. But you can reduce it if you go image. Decrease color depth, you can reduce it to a variety of different size colors, 256, 16, or even black and white. So you can reduce it, for example, to 256, and it will look like it's coming, I promise you. It has to actually determine which 256. And as you can see, it's down to 8 megapixels. 8 per pixel. down here in the left corner. And it doesn't look actually all that different. Now, if I go back and compare the post back to the original, if you save that, you would actually reduce the size of the saved image. Let's try that. Image, decrease color depth, 256. And now if I go Control S for save, Red Cactus 256, save. And now I go File, Open, Red Cactus 256, and open it. Well, as you can see, it's actually gone up to 20.46 megabytes. That's weird.
It could be the original color depth was actually 256 to begin with, and in its manipulation, it ended up growing a little bit.
I don't know why. Anyway, it should have worked, although it, as you can see down here, it still says it's 24.
Oh, it is 24-bit, yeah.
So it's a little weird. I don't know why that happens. That's a surprise. The other things you can do, of course, is reduce the size. Resize, resample. You can choose to reduce it to another size. For example, if you wanted to reduce it to just plain HD. Okay. As you can see down here, it's 1280 by 854. Control S. And let's call this HD. And F4. And as you can see, this is a lot smaller. It's 403 kilobytes. Let's bring back the original. File, open. Well, this is the big one again. 18 megabytes and 45 megapixels. You can also, in fact, you can reduce it even further as a showed, you can decrease the dollar depth. 256 is probably the least you want for a picture. If it's a screenshot of some sort, then you could go down to 16 or 2. But there's another way of saving this, and that's to use the Riot plugin. I'm not sure what Riot stands for, but basically it uses a variety of techniques to reduce the size of a JPG image. So if I do Control S again for save, you can see here there is a set file size. 16 is probably a little bit too small for a 45 megapixel picture. So what if we go down to say 256 kilobytes? And call this script. So this is the small, and we'll save. And Riot does a variety of things, playing with the JPG format, reduces colors, changes the how everything is compressed. If we open this, Red Cactus Small, if we open it, it looks like this. This is not making the way I thought it would. It's only 17.94, but it should have gone down to 256. I'm sorry, I have tested this out ahead of time.
Well, that's 17.94 megabytes.
Yeah, that's megabytes, yeah. But it should have gone down to 256 kilobytes.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
We'll save as. That's better. No wonder it didn't. It's apparently saved it as a PNG, which is the problem. File. Open. Good. I chose a deliberately a very big file to play with these things. Let's reduce the size. I'm sorry, it did work earlier, but not with this particular things. So just do a save as. And we want APG. You want to set the file size. You don't have to say save here. Okay. Save. It does take a while.
And then you have to go back to your main dialog box, save there, yeah.
And file, open, Redcat to small. If we open, as you can see,
Tom, just out of curiosity, if you look in the file system and see what the file size is, that might be an in-memory size or something like that, and it might be different than the actual size on disk.
Well, I'm getting confused, or at least my computer is. So we can go to... Here's Red Cactus. There's the original, which is about 20 megabytes.
Yeah, the small.
That was the one I tried, 256. Red Cactus HD was 404 kilobytes. Red Cactus Small, a different thing. So it is. It's not working the way I thought, or at least the way I've experienced it in the past. If I go to press enter, and here's the text. Yeah, anyway, this is not working the way that it should have. And maybe it gets confused because of the size of the file. That's really unfortunate. But the Riot plugin did work before. If I go to...
Yeah, Riot... I can actually attest to the fact that I just tried it on my system with a PNG, and I saved it as a JPEG. I specified the final size, and it did reduce it. So I'm not sure what happened on your system, but for me, UrfanView did respect the size that I wanted it at. Curious.
And Jocelyn's making a comment in the chat that he often sharpens the image after resizing with Shift and S.
Yes, we can do that in UrfanView. So this is the actual Riot Radical Image Optimization Tool. So let's try it in the actual original instead of just a plug-in. So where is Red? Red Panda. Red Moth. Red Cactus. Oh. So here we are. This is the this is the optimized image here is 6.57. That's the kind of the default have the most quality with a reasonable size. So 6.57 nits are right there. We can reduce it more. This is the quality down here, and you can move this down. Now we're down to 1.35 nib. Go down to 8%. We're down to 6. As you can see, there's a lot more banding here. Because of the reduction. But because you can see it, you can adjust that, move it up to say 13%. No big advantage. 18%, it's a little better. And around about 23%, yeah, it sort of looks okay there, and it's down to 1 bit. About 1 megabyte. And if you then you can actually specify a desired file size like you can in EarthenView. If I go down to 256, it'll be too far for a 45 megapixel image. It's down to 1.3. So let's try 15. Which is a little bigger than this. And we can save it. I was busy optimizing. It does a few passes down here, if you can see it, to get to 1.5 megabits. 4 megabytes. As you can see, it actually went a little below 1.46 megabytes. You can then save the result. This is rectangular.jpg. This is from all that riot. And get out of there. Alt F O. Open Red Cactus. If I could spell red correctly, it would help. So Red Cactus Riot.jpg. Open. And here it is. There's not too much banding. As you can see, it's 1.46 megabytes. In your computer, it's actually 128 megabytes. And the size is still 45 megabytes. And if you go into this, zooming in, this is about 31% magnification. It still looks pretty good. And now this is down from down to 1.5 megabytes from approximately 18 megabytes. So even though you actually reduced it, this is worth, let's go down to 100, approximately 100. This is about 100. And as you can see, even at 100%, it really looks pretty good. So Riot is a way of reducing the size of a file, of a JPEG file. You can also, now for example, you can save this if I do a file save as, and I choose to save this as a PNG, this will be quite big. And let's get out of there. This is Red Pack is Riot, and this will, this is Riot with the PNG. And if I try to save this, this is PNG, compression level, this is compression level 9, and it will try to save it and make it smaller. And it has a whole series of passes that it goes through to actually make it smaller successively. Because this is a 45 megapixel picture, it takes a while, even with 8 cores. But if you want to reduce a PNG, this will reduce it by usually about 40 or 50% compared to the original PNG. For example, if you take a screenshot, you can often reduce the number of colors to 16 and then reduce it with PNG and save it as a PNG, and it will become quite a bit smaller, usually about 30, 40% smaller. Except that it's taking a while with a 45 megapixel picture. So,
we're also coming up to the end of the hour, Tom, so maybe we'll let it save itself on your computer and
So a method-driven view, you can reduce the color count, you can reduce the image size in pixels. If you use the Riot plugin or the Riot app, you can reduce the JPG file size using Riot. And the PNG out plugin compresses PNG files. And the links for these are EarthenView. The plugins are here. The standalone Riot is here. And for PNG out, there's a new full file reference at the Wikipedia article. You can get it as a plugin for a variety of programs like XNView and so on. But it does a good job of compressing textual file, textual diagramming, the color screenshots and so on. So, I'm done.
Okay, Alan, do you want me to share for the wrap up?
Sure.
Okay.
There's only a couple of slides.
Yep. Okay. Let me find the right one. Okay.
So Chris had reminded you last week that our next monthly meeting will be in the fall, September the 8th, in fact. And it's going to be members' favorites. And remember that we have a special prize for the best presentation by a member, by a non-board member. So basically, put something together, 10 or 20 minutes, some app or hardware or website, anything that you think people would be interested in. We're going to have a poll to find out who wins, and the winner gets a 2 terabyte portable external USB drive. So we already have at least one presentation in the queue. So send us your information and we'll make sure that you have a slot available. And our next Q&A will be next Wednesday, June the 30th. So as usual, if you have questions, or if you have answers to any of the questions that we post early, or topics that you think people would be interested in and want to share, just drop us a line to the suggestion box. And again, we'll be pleased to accommodate you. So thanks very much, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, folks.
Thank you.